start with a very simple thing. One Fermion mode. So you have just one Fermion, and you have the anti-commutation relations that involve fermionic creation and annihilation operators. So these are just the anti-commutations. It is important to have the matrix representations for those operators. So it is clear that we have only two states, that is empty, no fermions, and that is occupied. One and only one fermion. So if we denote them in the matrix form, then we can write that these operators can be represented as follows. A is equal to this matrix, A dagger is equal to the other matrix, so one is here and one is here, and the number operated, that is A dagger A, is given by this, 0, 0, 0, 1. So in this form, if you add the unitary matrix, then A dagger and unitary, not unitary, but identity matrix, they form the basis in complex vector space of 2 by 2 matrices. And as a result, you can have the correspondence of these bases to the bases that involves Pauli matrices. So A dagger N and identity matrix has the correspondence with the Pauli matrices plus identity one. So you can check that the Pauli matrices can be expressed in the following way. A plus A dagger, so sigma y equal to A minus A dagger divided by I, and sigma z is equal to 1 minus 2n. It's just a simple exercise to check. Also, as an additional exercise, you can just check that when you express sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z via these relations, then you will exactly get the familiar anti-commutation relations between Pauli matrices. So it is essential that in this course, we will be denoting all operators with hats. So Gifford specifically instructed me to put hats on all the operators. Then why are we having all this? We're having all this because ultimately we will be interested in calculations of density matrix rho. That will subsequently enter the entanglement entropy, that is the major quantity we will be calculating in this course for various systems. So this density matrix, due to superselection rules, must have well-defined parity of fermion number. Anyone can tell me what the parity of the fermion number is? Anyone knows anything about this quantity? Parity of a fermion number, if we have just one fermion. So parity of the, yeah, it's minus one in power n. So it's basically minus one in power n, where n is the operator. So when n is zero, when the we have the state with the absent with the fermion absent, then the parity is equal to one. We call it the state with even parity. And when n is one, then this will be the state with odd parity. So so it must have the well-defined parity because the states with different number of fermions simply cannot mix with each other. So in other words, if we calculate any physical observable or the matrix elements between the states having different fermions numbers, it must be zero. So to write it in the other way is simply that rho must commute, being the operators. So these two are operators, so rho must compute with the operator of the parity of fermion number. So as a result, we must have that the matrix elements between the states having different parities must be equal to zero. So this further means that the density matrix for one fermion must be determined by the other two matrix elements. A dagger A, if we take the average with respect, if we take the average written in this way, so if we write the average involving trace and the density matrix, then it must be equal to the matrix element between states with one fermions. And we can write it in the following way. 1 minus mu divided by 2. So as a result, because a dagger average must be equal to 1 minus A dagger A, it is equal to 1 plus mu divided by 2. So the density matrix can be written in the matrix form as follows. 1 plus mu over 2, 0, 0, 1 minus mu over 2. So the only parameter that characterizes, in fact, the density matrix is mu. So we have one fermion, we have one parameter. Then also, if we describe our system with one fermion with the Hamiltonian, it must also have the form that Hamiltonian. It must also have the form that conserves parity number. And the only possibility, because due to this, is that H has the following form. Epsilon A dagger A, or in the matrix form, it looks like this. So down the road, let me write down the expression for the entropy of the system for Neumann entropy related to one fermion. So in fact, this is the quantity we will be interested in for various systems, mainly the systems of many fermions. And there will be exercise in the course where you will have to calculate exactly the average of this operator with respect to the ground state for the case when you have many fermions. And at this point, let me just provide you with the expression for the entropy involving one fermion. the logarithm is taken to the base of 2. And apparently, all the calculations will be done in the expressions where logarithm is taken with the base of 2. So minus 1 minus mu divided by 2 log 2, 1 minus mu divided by 2. So this is all we have, we must know if we consider just one fermion. Now let's consider more complicated case, the system of n fermion modes. So here we have the set of creation and annihilation operators that satisfies the traditional anti-commutation relations. So the set A1AN satisfies AI dagger AJ equal to delta IJ and AI AJ is equal to 0. So I, j are the indices that label the fermion species, and they go from 1 to n. Yeah, so if you have any questions, just interrupt me. So there is, this is what you apparently know, and this operator n is the operator of the total number of particles is equal to sum over I of ni. And it's a total particle number operator. So when we talk about the parity of the states, we imply that we take minus 1 and put it in the power of this n, where n is the total particle number operator. So, good. Then we must have the basis. For one fermion, we had the basis that involved either absence of the fermion or the presence of only one fermion. So here we have the following basis. It consists of 2 in power n possible states, n1, n2, and so forth, nn, where ni equal to either 0 or 1. There are 2 in power large n of such possible states. And again, when we consider the density matrix and the Hamiltonian, they must conserve parity. So rho and h must satisfy this relation, minus 1 in power n equal to 0, and the same for the Hamiltonian, minus n equal to 0. Good, so what does this mean then? This means the following, that whenever we take the average of the product of any odd number of operators, is it must be 0. So as a result of this, we must have that the averages of these operators So if we have just one operator or three operators, and so forth, must be equal to zero. So there, this is the consequence of the fact that rho and h must commute with the parity number operator. So such all such averages must be equal to zero. So our next task will be to consider two types of very simple Hamiltonians that describe and fermionic modes that don't interact with each other. And we will consider first, so the general form of such quadratic Hamiltonians. Quadratic Hamiltonians of n modes. So the most general form, in fact, the most general form of the Hamiltonian that conserves parity number is this. H equal to sum ij, aij, ai dagger, aj, plus sum over ij, bij, AI, AJ, plus is Hermitian conjugate. A in the first term is the matrix that must be Hermitian. So AIJ equal to AIJ dagger, so Hermitian. So and B can apparently have any form. Here it does need to be Hermitian because we by hand add the Hermitian conjugate. Then the special importance here is given to the states that have the name of the Gaussian state. So I tried to check what the Gaussian state is in quantum information, and the answer that I could find was quite vague. So the Gaussian state is the state whose density matrix has, roughly speaking, the Gaussian form. But I believe in quantum information this meaning has quite, well, the definition of the Gaussian state has somewhat specific meaning. So if we have the Gaussian state that can be characterized by the density matrix rho, then we can say that for such types of Hamiltonian, since they are quadratic, we have the Weak's theorem. So a Gaussian state obeys Weak's theorem, meaning that any expectation value for an even power of annihilation and creation operators can be represented as a sum of products of the averages of pairs of such operators. For example, the average of four operators, AI, AJ, AK dagger, AL dagger can be represented as follows: AI AJ times AK dagger AL dagger minus AI AK dagger. So cats everywhere. AJ AL dagger plus AL dagger AJ AK dagger. So keep, so A, one second, AI AJ, so those two daggers, AK dagger, dagger then. Yes, yes. So keep in mind that in general, these averages are not equal to zero if you have this type of the Hamiltonian. But nevertheless, the Wicks theorem is valid. And in order to write down the average of the arbitrary number of operators, you have to enumerate all possible averages that involve all possible pairs, A and A dagger. Of course, if this term is absent, then these terms will be absent as well. We will consider those Hamiltonians in a moment. So, and what is important because of this Wicks theorem, that rho is completely characterized by AI dagger AJ and AI AJ. So I should tell you that this Hamiltonian conserves, this general form, conserves the parity number, but it does not conserve the number of particles itself. So in other words, it commutes with minus one in power n, but it does not commute with n itself. So you may wonder why all this is important. Why this statement that rho is completely characterized by these pairs so is important. The reason for this is that it reduces the computational cost. So to diagonalize the most general Hamiltonian, we need to have the computational cost of the order of O in power to 3n. So Gifford in the future lectures will talk about the computational cost. But for this particular type of Hamiltonian, we can reduce the computational cost knowing that rho is completely characterized by these pairs. And instead of this computational cost, you will have the reduced computational cost of O n in power cubed. So what is meant by the computational cost, you will learn. So quite many exercises in the course will involve the evaluation of the computational cost for different modal Hamiltonians. But this is later. I'm just telling you why this whole line of consideration is important. So we can first, and this will be the last thing we are going to consider probably in today's lecture. We will first consider the very simple case in which all B's, Bij's are equal to zero. And on today's tutorial, you will consider the more general case where Bijs are not equal to zero. So quadratic Hamiltonians with particle number preservation. Those Hamiltonians will have, for n fermions, will have very, very simple form. Sum over ij, aij, ai a dagger, aj. With Hermitian matrix A. Can anyone tell me why this Hamiltonian conserves the number of particles, but the more general Hamiltonian above does not conserve the total number of particles? Exactly, yeah. Yeah. They either increase the number of particles by two or decrease. So because they can increase the number of particles by two, but not by one, they nevertheless preserve the parity number, but do not preserve the total number of particles. So this simple Hamiltonian preserves further the number of particles, and it is quite easy to check that H is just a C simple exercise. Then, of course, we must have the same for the density operator. So Gaussian state rho must also satisfy this relation, rho comma n equal to zero. So the commutation of operators rho and n, where n is the total number of particles, is equal to zero. And also, because of all this, we have that ai, aj equal to zero, and ai dagger, aj dagger also equal to zero. So, and as a consequence of this last statement, we have that for n modes, rho is completely characterized by the averages A I dagger A J. Or so we can introduce the matrix M ij equal to delta ij minus 2 average of ai dagger aj. So matrix M is Hermitian as well. Let me move up. So, any questions? So, in fact, what you will be doing, yeah. Could you go again how we define the A Gaussian state? It's a good question. So it's basically the state that has the Gaussian form, roughly speaking. I couldn't find anything else. For example, if you have the Gibbs distribution, then it has the Gaussian form, e in power minus h divided by t. And while doing the calculation with this density matrix, you have the weak theory. Yeah, for example, Boltzmann, this is just Gibbs distribution,
Shouldn't that be anti-Hermitian instead of Hermitian?
Why anti-Hermitian?
Because if I take the complex quantity with the dagger of M, then I plot the average of A dagger A. So I use that computation related with a minus sign.
One second. I know. You see, the point is that if you compute mji, then this will involve the exchange of j and I, but not swapping. So mji equal to delta ji minus 2 aj dagger ai. Yeah. Now you have to take the complex conjugate, right? Now you have to take the complex conjugate, and you will take the complex conjugate of this average. So, okay. So let me continue. I have three more pages. So to diagonalize H in general, to diagonalize H, we consider the unitary matrix U. It is unitary. It belongs to the space of all unitary matrices of the n by n size, such that A is represented in this form, U, and this matrix, epsilon 1, 0, 0, epsilon 2, so forth, epsilon n, 0, 0, and here we have u dagger. So epsilon 1 and epsilon n are the eigenvalues, of A. And all, because A is Hermitian, all epsilon k are real. So we can also, if we know the form of this matrix U, the matrix that in fact diagonalizes A, we can introduce the new set of fermionic operators. BK, it's in fact nothing else than, okay, BK equal to sum over L U dagger, I'll write this way, K L A L, and so we can also have the inverse transformation sum over K U L K B K, and if you substitute A's expressed through B's, this gives, so substitute H equal to sum of K epsilon K B K dagger B K. Okay. So it's here it is U dagger. Yeah, here it is U dagger, and here it is U. Yeah, I simply write matrices with a double arrowed line on top. So in this course, we will do the calculations with respect to ground states. So, because the calculations involving density matrices with respect to excited states, they are more involved. So even if Gifford doesn't mention with respect to which state you should calculate the averages, assume that it is with respect to the ground state. So this will be always true in this course, just to caution you about this simplification. So that's why let's look what type of the ground state, what kind of ground state this Hamiltonian has. So the ground state can be represented in this form. Will be just as the direct product of k, k running from 1 to n of mk, where mk is an occupation number. Number, so satisfying the following, bk dagger BK acting on MK is MK state labeled by MK. So MK is either 0 or 1. And whether MK is 0 or 1 is determined by the sign of this epsilon k. We know that epsilon k must be real, but it can be either positive or negative. So for the average of bk dagger bk with respect to state labeled by mk is equal to either zero if epsilon k is greater than one, greater than zero, or one if epsilon k is smaller than zero. So what does this mean? This means that delta KL minus 2 BK dagger BK is the matrix that has this form, signum epsilon 1, 0, 0, so forth. Here, signum epsilon 2, and so forth, signum epsilon n. So is this clear? Why we represent this in this form. So this is this matrix that involves BK dagger and BK, but we are interested in this matrix M that involves A dagger and A, not B's. Thus, in order to get the quantity of interest, we must apply the unitary transformation to already this matrix. So the unitary transformation that is written above that is supposed to diagonalize A. So matrix M, this matrix will determine the von Neumann entropy, and we will talk about this later in the course. M will be given by, well, it is denoted as signum of A is just a notation. U applied to this matrix, signum epsilon 1, so forth, signum epsilon n. And here, U dagger. So we first diagonalize the Hamiltonian, obtain the values of epsilon and their signs, then consider this matrix, and then go to the matrix involving original operators, applying the unitary transformation. So the eigenvalues of this total matrix will determine the von Neumann entropy. But this is just in the future. So good. I have to give you one simple example, and that will be it for today. This example is important because of the notations. When you diagonalize matrices, you use, of course, the discrete set of variables. For example, such a variable as momentum, and it must have the discrete form. So, and while considering this example, I will pay particular attention to the notations, how momentum should look like in the discrete form. For example, if the number of sides is odd. So it is important because you of course substitute in the programs not continuous momentum but only discrete to diagonalize the corresponding matrices. I'm still trying to determine the correct height. What? The medium board has gone out of order. No, it didn't. But anyway, so example 5A. We will consider a simple Hamiltonian that will be a function of one parameter lambda, L equal from 1 to n, 1 half A L dagger A L plus 1 plus A L plus 1 dagger A L minus 2 lambda and or A L dagger A L. A simple Hamiltonian, you can recognize that this is the Hamiltonian that describes the hopping of fermions on one-dimensional lattice. So this is the hopping term, and this is the term that represents the chemical potential. Basically, if you recall your course from condensed matter core. So we assume n odd and periodic boundary conditions. Periodic boundary conditions. So n plus one side equal to first side, basically. So to diagonalize this Hamiltonian, we'll introduce the Fourier modes. Fourier modes, bk equal to 1 over square root of n, l equal to 1 to n, al, e in power minus I 2 pi kl divided by n. Look, k and l here are just numbers. They are just integers, both. This is what you should pay attention to. And as a result, al equal to 1 over square root of n sum from k from minus n minus 1 over 2 to n minus 1 over 2 bk e I 2 pi kl divided by n. So since n is odd, then k is an integer. So you can check that this Fourier transformation is valid. You can check this as an exercise, because at first glance you may be uncomfortable with manipulating the Fourier transformations where both k and l are just integer and are discrete. Check the consistency. So similarly, of course, for BK dagger and AL dagger. So already here, we should note the following, that the unitary matrix is in fact a matrix that has two indices that run the discrete set of numbers that U has this form, U LK, has this form, 1 over square root of n e in power I 2 pi LK divided by n. So this matrix is unitary. If K, if L goes from 1 to n, and K runs between minus n minus 1 over 2 to n minus 1 over 2. And U is unitary. So essential that K runs between minus n minus 1 over 2 to n minus 1 over 2. So if we do the substitution, we will immediately see that in this sum L going from 1 to L dagger A L plus 1 is equal to sum of the K from those values BK dagger BK E in power I 2 pi over N L K, then sum over L from 1 to N AL dagger AL equal to sum over K BK dagger BK, and as a result H will be equal to sum over K epsilon K BK dagger BK. What, yep. So if you sum over L, you substitute the operators, and sorry, yeah, absolutely true, yeah. So sorry, yeah. I didn't notice this, and yeah, very good. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. So H equal to this, where epsilon K is equal to lambda minus cosine, yeah, 2 pi K divided by N. Yeah, K is again a discrete number that runs between these two values written above. And what is most important? The most important result of this is the form of matrix MLL prime. This is in fact the matrix that we need. It is sum KK prime, if we substitute 1 over square root of n, e in power I 2 pi l k divided by n. This is our unitary matrix times our original matrix kk prime minus 2 ak dagger ak prime. This one times 1 over square root of n e in power minus I 2 pi over n l p prime k prime, right? And if we substitute everything, we will have k k prime 1 over square n e I 2 pi divided by n l k delta k k prime signum epsilon k. Right, times 1 over square root of n e in power minus I 2 pi divided by n l prime k prime. And this will be equal to 1 over n times sum over k signum epsilon k e in power I 2 pi over n l minus l prime k. So we achieved our goal and obtained the compact expression for this matrix M L L prime, and it is given by this expression. You can see that this matrix is Hermitian. So any questions at this point? So during the next lecture, Giffrey will tell you a lot more about this, the structure of the course, about the purpose of the course, what the basic tasks of the course are, so what you should learn after you complete all the homeworks and tutorials. This will be tomorrow, and that's it for today. Thank you for your attention.